Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Okay, today we have Phil Hack. He's a program manager with the web platform and tools team, and Phil is in charge of NuGet, and he's also in charge of the ASP.NET MVC, two very exciting technologies that I'm looking forward to talking with him about. We also have John Galloway, my partner in crime in the developer guidance group at Microsoft, and on the Full Stack project. Phil, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good and really happy to have you here. John, you're with us? John, you're with us?
That was on purpose this time.
It's become a trademark.
It is. Yep.
So, Phil, I want to find out a lot about ASP.NET MVC, but I know that you just had a release at Mix of the tools. Do I have that right? Of a refresh of the tools?
That is right. We released ASP.NET MVC 3 tools update. So there's no runtime changes in there, but we improved a lot of the tooling that you get when you write MVC applications using Visual Studio.
And let's back up for folks. We've had a show or two with John about MVC, but can you give us the high-level view of what's going on with MVC 3 and how that relates to ASP.NET in general?
Absolutely not.
Okay, thanks for coming.
Is that why you had me on, Jesse, as a fallback?
I did, because I knew he was going to do
as
that.
As a backup, because Phil's a bit of a prima donna, right? No, sure, I could tell you a little bit about it. So the main thing that we added to the tools update, probably the biggest feature, is the scaffolding feature. So you can take a EF code first object, for example, and then generate like all your CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete. So you generate a controller that will provide views and logic for handling those and all the related views. So effectively, once you scaffold that object, you can go in and create instances, edit instances, delete instances, and look at a list of them. And so that's a pretty, you know, way of getting rapidly up to speed with EF code first, as well as being able to quickly get data access going so that you can populate your databases. The other things we did was we included EF code first as a pre-installed NuGet package along with jQuery, jQuery validation, and modernizer. And so what that means is that when you create a new MVC application, these things will be installed as packages. So even if they ship on a regular occurrence out of band or outside of our product, such as jQuery, which ships a new version every month, you can just go into your project, launch NuGet, click the Updates tab, and you'll see which of those libraries have newer versions available, and you're free to upgrade them, you know, as you wish. The other thing we included was an intranet project template. So when you go to File, New MVC 3 Project, and you look at the, have this new project dialog, and you'll see intranet as one of the options there for building a site that uses Windows authentication. And then we also have this new HTML5 checkbox in the File New Project dialog. And what that does is if you check that box, that will emit HTML5 attributes and also include the modernizer library. And the benefit of the modernizer library is that it provides support in the DOM for HTML5 elements in browsers that don't yet support HTML5. So there's elements such as the footer, header, menu that we'll include, and those things would not get rendered in IE6, for example, or IE7. You know, we need to kill IE6, so I'll just say IE7, and 8 probably too. I can't even remember. So with the modernizer library in those down-level browsers, those elements will be added to the DOM and be rendered equivalent to block elements like divs or whatever, so that you can go ahead and style them, and the templates look more or less the same in a down-level browser as they do in a browser that does support HTML5.
Historically, there's been ASP.NET, and there's also been web forms. And then along came MVC. Now, is web forms, let's start here, is web forms a synonym for classic ASP.NET, or are those two separate things?
I don't think that's a synonym. I've classic ASP.NET, I mean, well, let me put it this way. I think for some people, classic ASP.NET being a synonym for web forms is an attempt to be derogatory towards web forms, right or wrong. Web forms is definitely still alive, and there's a lot of active work going on in that. In fact, we're all one big ASP.NET team, for example, and my coworker Damian Edwards is responsible for a lot of the new stuff happening with web forms. And some of that stuff is coming from things that we did in MVC. Likewise, some of the things we did for ASP.NET and, you know, web forms or proper have rolled into MVC. So there's a lot of cross-sharing among these different technologies. And the key thing to keep in mind is that, you know, while we have, we actually have sort of like three different presentation frameworks, right? We have MVC, we have web forms, and we have web pages, or what we call ASP.NET web pages, which a lot of people think of as part of web matrix. But they all have an underlying core of ASP.NET, right? So the provider model, the underlying framework is all ASP.NET.
Excellent. That's very helpful. So when I turn to a buddy of mine who's been writing ASP.NET since version 3.5 or since version 3, and when MVC came out, he said, no way, not interested, just going to continue doing what I'm doing. And then MVC 2 came out. Now MVC 3 is out. Does there come a point where he is falling behind an important curve and really needs to understand ASP.NET MVC? Or can he go on doing what he's doing with classic ASP.NET?
Is this the my friend in quotation marks?
He's actually my co-author. But it's a serious question in terms of the ASP.NET programmers out there and whether we've hit a point where it really is time to learn MVC 3, even if there's a high bar for learning a new technology.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, there's two ways to look at it, right? Like, will we continue to invest in web forms, and will web forms be a viable way to build web applications in the future? I think, yes, that is the case. On the flip side, I'm a big advocate of always trying to, you know, sharpen the saw, right? Which is keep your skills sharp, and why not learn what else is out there so that you stay relevant? For example, if you, you know, how secure is your job? You know, if your job, if you lose your job, do you want to be only restricted to a certain subset of potential openings, or do you want to have the skill set to, for example, have a broader set of openings available to you? So I'm a big fan. I think, you know, learning MVC is a good thing. I don't see why, you know, you wouldn't at least want to dabble in it to see what, you know, the other people are doing. And in fact, I kind of take that philosophy towards non-Microsoft technologies as well, right? You should play around with Rails and auto play around with Django and kind of see how these different ideas that are evident in other types ways of doing these web development frameworks might actually filter into the type of work you're doing day to day with whatever technology you're on. So you may end up learning something that perhaps, you know, you won't use in MVC, but you learn something from MVC that you'll now use in web forms. And in some ways, you know, it may give you a heads up on what's coming, right, in the future. So at Mix, Damien showed a demo of model binders in web forms. So if you've done MVC, you already have an understanding of the general concept of what a model binder and a value provider are, and you'll have a head start on that when you continue to do web form, when that feature rolls into web forms.
Now let me ask the more provocative question, which is when the rubber hits the road, if a developer wants to start working in ASP.NET and they do not have a particular background in either classic ASP.NET or MVC, and they want to get up to speed fast with the most effective technology, would you advise that MVC 3 be the starting point for them?
That's a good question. Are they a pro developer, or are they like someone who's never written code before?
Let's go with a pro developer.
Okay, so they're a pro developer, but they're not a web developer.
Or they're not in the ASP.NET space at the moment.
Because it's important, the reason why I ask that is it's sort of important to know these kind of things before I could give a recommendation. I just don't really see a lot of advice being really good. I don't see there being a lot of good one-size-fit-all advice, right? So if you're coming from a PHP or Rails background, I would easily say look at MVC. I think MVC is going to fit a model that you're used to. Or if you're even coming from classic ASP, I would say look at MVC. If you were a pro Visual Basic developer or that sort of like rich client developer, then I think it's a little more up in the air. I'm obviously biased towards MVC. That's the product I work on. I think, you know, I personally would probably recommend people go to MVC. But if you're just learning out, I mean, I think it fits the model of how the web works. However, I wouldn't dissuade anyone from Webforms if they had a really good reason to look into Webforms. Like, you know, it's still a huge percentage of our customers are still on Webforms. So there is that aspect of, well, you know, if you're looking for a job, you know, there are going to be a lot of Webforms jobs out there because most of our customers are on Webforms. However, I do see a lot of inertia moving towards MVC for a lot of pro shops who are building real websites. They're not intending their application to really model the controls model of a Visual Basic type of environment. So, yeah, I would probably recommend that they look at MVC, but, you know, I think both are valid choices.
John, you're still with us, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just great. Barely. I'm going to enlist you. I know you think you're here as a guest, but I'm going to enlist you to help me probe with Phil a little bit of the depth of MVC. And so please feel free to jump in and ask questions about MVC based on your experience, because I believe that you've been working with it for quite some while.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm happy to do that. Can I, one thing to go back to a question you asked earlier, which is, you know, are you falling behind if you're not learning MVC, and should I learn MVC and that kind of thing? And at a very basic level, I think that it's not such a charged question as people have kind of made it out to be. And a lot more of it is like, if you're an ASP.NET developer, should you learn about modules and handlers? Well, you probably should, you know? And I mean, it's that kind of level. Like, everything, it's ASP.NET running underneath as the core. That's what's handling your network stuff. That's what's handling your session. That's what handles your membership. That's, you know, so I mean, that's all the same. And it's really more just how are you handling the presentation side of your application? And so learning about a different way of presenting your information doesn't mean you have to, like, you know, leave one group and swear allegiance somewhere else. It's just you're learning a new presentation technology, which is going to help no matter what you're doing. And a lot of WebForms developers are moving towards the MVP, like WebForms MVP and that kind of thing, which is, you know, similar. It's applying a pattern that makes your development easier and makes it easier to manage.
And so, when you say MVP, you mean Model View Presenter, which
exactly.
is essentially a variant on Model View Controller. So that brings the question then of what's the hard part in coming up to speed with ASP.NET MVC? Is it learning the MVC pattern, or is it the syntax, or the semantics really different in MVC?
So if you're coming from WebForms, I think the challenge is that the concepts are different, right? It's interesting because in many ways, when you use ASP.NET MVC, you don't actually need to have this really deep understanding of the MVC pattern, right? Instead, what you do is you learn the conventions that an MVC application follows, and you just follow the conventions, and you can do a pretty decent job. Now, I highly recommend you actually understand the patterns. I mean, I recommend you try to learn as much as you can about the underlying concepts and frameworks and stuff, but you can get by without having this really deep knowledge of MVC. I think where people get tripped up from the WebForms world is that MVC is a lot closer to the model of how the web works, right? Everything's request, response, stateless, whereas WebForms can trick you into believing that the web is stateful, right? You click a button and then a label, change the label text, and it feels like this real stateful environment. And the reason it feels that way is that, you know, WebForms has gone out of its way to shuttle the state back and forth between the client and the server in the form of view state or in control state. So these hidden inputs that contain the state of, like, what the controls are. But under the hood, what's really happening is that, you know, you send this view of the world, this, you know, the state of all these controls into the browser, and then those controls go away, right? The request is done. The person is looking at the state of the page, and those controls don't exist in memory, but then the person clicks a button to change the label text, posts all of that state information back to the server. All those controls are recreated and repopulated based on the state of that request, you know, hidden in those hidden inputs, and then it's processed, and then the response is sent back. And so, you know, in the end, it really, you know, even WebForms is running in a stateless environment, but it's giving you this illusion of state by sending it all back and forth. And so I think that's the part that gets people tripped up coming from WebForms to MVC, is that it's a whole different model of thinking about how web applications are built. You really have to think about this fact that it's stateless. So I send in this, I'm handling a request, not a button click. You know, I'm handling a request, not a on key up or on key down or any of these things that you might, you know, get used to doing in WebForms.
And am I managing all that state myself manually?
In many cases, yes and no, right? Yes, you are managing the state, but no in that you're changing the way you're building applications, so less state needs to be shuttled back and forth. So, you know, one hallmark of a modern web app is that a lot of that state we used to shuttle back and forth is really state of a control. And that state is not that interesting in terms of your application's business logic. That's only interesting to the presentation. So why not keep that state in the browser where it belongs, in my mind? So as an example, if you have a grid and you're clicking on columns to sort the columns, right? In effect, you know, we don't need to remember on the server side which column you click. That state should be on the client. Instead, you can do an AJAX call to actually get the data and just tell us what sort you're in. Here's the data. And we don't need to know what your previous sort was. We don't need to know. We don't need to maintain that state on the server side. All we get is this request that says, hey, I want this data sorted on this column. The server handles that request and it's done. And it's really simple. So it's just to summarize, you're managing the state, but a lot of that state is managed for you by just keeping it on the client.
Yes. And when I make those AJAX calls, am I conscious that I'm using AJAX or am I making a jQuery function call and it's just being taken care of for me?
In many cases, you are aware that you're using AJAX because you're going to have to do things slightly different. Like you're making a jQuery call as opposed to calling some, you know, generic method. And with MVC, though, we do, in some cases, help you with that. We do have some helpers geared towards very simple scenarios. For example, if you use the AJAX.begin form helper, you can specify some parameters to it, and we'll actually use jQuery to hook that up so that when you submit that form, it posts it asynchronously, gets the response, and updates an element in your page.
I noticed in watching John developing an MVC application that there's a great deal of help provided in that there are wizards, and when you're hooking controllers to views, there's a great deal of convention over configuration that enormously simplifies the job. It becomes fairly straightforward, at least from a initial perspective, to get things up and running.
That's one thing. We realize that the model is very different for example, web forms developers or developers new to web development. And we really focused a lot on getting what I call the file new project experience streamlined and get people up to speed quick and easy. And so what we do is with the new project dialog, you pick a template and we have for example, if you pick the internet template, we have a full-on application that uses membership. You can register, you can log in. I mean, it's not an application you would then go and deploy to production, but it gets you, partway there in terms of understanding how all these pieces fit together. So when I say that the ASP.NET includes membership, that is called into via our project template. And then we have things like the scaffolding, as you mentioned, where that helps you get going with data access pretty quickly and just kind of get the basics going. I mean, these are, you know, it's not enough. You still need to learn, you know, the general concepts of programming and all these other things. But, you know, at a real basic level, by just playing around with our project templates, we help get you part of the way there. And so things like, you know, having conventions that to follow, like our default project template sets up a good set of conventions. And if you follow them, things are a little bit easier than if you decide not to follow them. Of course, you're welcome to always make up your own conventions and extend MVC in a variety of ways. But if you follow the same conventions that, you know, the project templates do, you're likely to get a lot of mileage out of that because other people are following those conventions. And so when, you know, you go to a new MVC project and they follow those conventions, you know where things are laid out. You know where the controllers are, you know where the views are, and so on.
So, John, he's making it sound pretty easy and pretty powerful. Help me out here. What's the hidden underside that I should be going after?
You know, let me see. I think the one place where I see people stumble a little bit is in the directly trying to translate how you've built traditional, like, it's easy enough to build a horrendous page in web forms where you throw a bunch of data grids and drop downs and all these things that all the controls are interrelated, and you try and dump that right into an MVC application, and sometimes that model, well, it's the wrong model for building a web application, but I think that is kind of the trickiest thing. That's sometimes when I talk to people and they say, you know, I'm doing web forms. I'd like to move to MVC. Here's how my intranet app works. And after listening to them describe it for a while, I say, I don't know, man. You're kind of stuck. I mean, they could try and write some really awesome, you know, JavaScript and do a lot of Ajax-y stuff, but I think that's tough. But honestly, I think that that's a failure on the on the application point of view. And I don't think there's really anything that MVC can or should do different there.
Okay. Another fan. What can I say?
You know, I'll say one other
such
thing.
Such a fanboy.
I know.
How's that play taste, John?
I'm having trouble reading the lines here, Phil. Can you type them a little slower? one other thing I'll say is that it was harder to learn. It wasn't terribly difficult to learn with MVC 1 or 2, but I think especially like with MVC 3, you know, like we've seen in building out applications for full stack and that kind of thing, it's you can really quickly write a working controller with a model, with database persistence, and it's actually pretty decent code. Like, it's maintainable code, and you can look at the account controller that's included in the default template, and it's, you know, it's an example of how you can write not just a controller, but how you can do forms with custom validation, and so it shows views and models and controllers working together and validation and all that. So I think that it's definitely gotten easier. I've found that when I was doing the updates for the MVC Music Store, I've done those since, you know, over the past year, I think I've made four kind of major updates to it. And this last one with the tools update, I replaced a whole section where I explained painfully, you know, here's how to create all your edit forms and here's how to write edit templates and all that. And I just replaced it with a scaffold and then wrote a lot more explanatory material and still dropped 20 pages from the tutorial. So, I mean, I do think it's gotten a lot easier.
So that brings up my next question, which is, have the changes from MVC 1 to 2 to 3 been fairly incremental? And if someone were going to learn MVC 3 today, who's, once again, a programmer but not necessarily an ASP.NET programmer, aside from going to John's Music Store tutorial, would you recommend that they wait for the ASP.NET 3 books to come out? Or what's your recommendation in terms of moving through that material?
It's funny because I'm writing, I'm part of a team of four that are writing a book, and so is John. So I think we're going to say, yeah, buy our book.
But what's your book going to be called?
Professional ASP.NET MVC 3. So it's by Rox. Kidding aside, though, I actually don't wait for the books. Books are kind of... I shouldn't say this, and my publisher is going to get all upset. But I think going online and looking at online tutorials, books are great for what they are. I think they're not quite fully dead yet, but they in some ways feel like they're on the last breath. But you know, I was reading a thread, and people were saying, well, you know, the nice thing about books is that they can kind of go into more depth and put all this material in one place rather than, you know, finding a bunch of blog posts and this and that. But more and more, we're trying to get the ASP.NET site to be that site where all these things really are gathered together and are comprehensive. And so the Music Store tutorials, I think, are really great for kind of getting up to speed and learning about MVC. The tutorials on ASP.NET website are getting better and better. So I think there's a lot of good material online so that you don't have to, you don't have to wait for the books to come out. But when the books come out, and if that's a way that you like to learn, then, you know, feel free to buy our book. But the other place, you know, for help is once you have questions, you know, go to our forums or go to stackoverflow.com.
I think one thing too, you know, like definitely I generally learn from reading things online and sometimes just dropping into the source code and that kind of thing. So in some ways it's kind of difficult to shift the mindset. I don't know if it is for you, Phil, but into like, well, if I was trying to learn this by reading a book, what would I do? You know? But I do think like in terms of this, we've spent a lot of time, like this version of the book is pretty much a full rewrite of the previous two versions. And we really focused on, you know, like kind of more telling a story and kind of beginning to end, like how you would actually learn it. So trying to provide that context and kind of a learning path. And then also, you know, it's been tech reviewed by Lon Lipton, and it's, you know, Brad and Phil are on it, and also K. Scott Allen. So, I mean, I think overall it's, you know, pretty good.
I hear what you're saying about looking online and looking at source code. I have to say, from my side that having a book on my shelf that I can go to and look up in an index or read through as a essentially as a story, as a coherent story of the technology, can be extremely valuable. So I'll buy your book. When will your book be out?
I think it's late July or early August. You know, we're finishing up the editorial process, but it just takes a while to actually get it in the stores and kill all those trees and all that.
Right. Okay, but fairly soon. Phil, before we stop, I don't want to miss the opportunity to ask you about NuGet. And can you tell me a little bit about, first, you might want to introduce what NuGet is for the 6 or 7 people in the country who haven't heard of it, but also to talk a little bit about how that concept came about and what the status is of NuGet today.
So if you haven't heard of NuGet, go to NuGet.org, check it out, or NuGet.coplex.com. It's an out-of-curve product that Microsoft also ships as part of ASP.NET MVC. And what it is a package manager for developers. And so the focus of our package manager is not installing applications or anything like that on your machine. It's really about installing libraries or units of functionality into your Visual Studio projects or into your code projects. So you can actually use it outside of Visual Studio as well. But that's sort of our core scenario has been Visual Studio, but we do support several scenarios where it's not within Visual Studio. And it automates a lot of things that you were kind of before you were doing manually before NuGet was there. So if you wanted to use an assembly like ELMA, which is the kind of the classic example I use, there's a lot of steps you would take to get ELMA into your project. And sometimes, you know, you're so desensitized to these steps that they don't feel painful. But you would go and search for it, download it, you know, unblock it, copy it into some lib folder in your solution, and then add a reference to it from each of the projects you want to add a reference to it. And with NuGet, we've automated pretty much all those steps. You launch the NuGet dialog, search for it, click install on it, and then we'll do that. And we'll also modify the web.config if necessary. And then the best part is, say you're taking advantage of these 10 or 20 open source projects and you're ready to come out with version 2 of your application, you may want to know which of those dependencies that I'm using have updates available, have new versions. And so you can click the updates tab and NuGet will show you which of the packages you have installed have updates available, and it'll make it really easy to go ahead and update all of those packages. So that's kind of what it does. And it started as a feature of ASP.NET MVC 3, but it has taken on a life of its own. As I mentioned earlier, it started initially as a Microsoft project that then was contributed to the Out of Curve Foundation, which is an independent open source foundation, much like Apache or the Eclipse Foundation. And it's been developed as an open source project from then on with external contributions. And so that's a pretty exciting part. I used to joke that, I would really love to do open source as my day job. Well, you know, now I'm doing that. So it's been a lot of fun working on it, and I'm really pleased with it. And one of the goals was for NuGet was to help kind of provide a support to the open source ecosystem. There's all these really great libraries out there, but sometimes they're kind of a pain to incorporate and use and figure out how the dependencies all work. And now, you know, with if package authors, do that work for you, you don't have to do that work. So it's kind of like, you know, rather than making everyone who tries to use your library figure all these things out, you figure it out once, and then when they install it, it puts everything in the right place. And I think that's a big benefit for the open source ecosystem. But I do want to point out that this is not just for open source libraries. Like if you have a free library but you have a closed license, it's still acceptable to put them in NuGet. So for example, Entity Framework is in NuGet. It's free. You can use it in pretty much any of your apps, but it's not an open source library.
My understanding is that the work involved in creating a package has greatly simplified recently. Is that accurate?
We've been doing a lot of work to simplify package creation, because if we're going to have this package manager and we're going to try to get people to put their packages in, it's of utmost importance to us that it's as easy as possible. So it's easy if you, it's really, really easy if you have some, you know, a fairly simple scenario, which we think most of them are, which is I have this really cool assembly with some functionality. I want to make it a package and put it on NuGet. It gets a little harder if you try to do something more and more complex, and we're working on a lot of these scenarios. The main thing, and I'll be writing a blog post about this, that would help us out, is we're really trying to cultivate really good contributors. So we have a couple contributors who, we made one core, and we'll probably make another one core, who've really contributed deep code and not just, you know, drive-by check-ins, which we love those too. I mean, we love anything we get from the community, right? But we're trying to cultivate this set of developers because I don't get all the resources I might want. But over time, we hope that that doesn't become an issue because, you know, the community really feels this is their project and something that they can contribute to. And we have quite a few contributors already that I'll highlight in my blog post.